And good evening, everyone. It is me, Tom Candela, and welcome once again to another episode of Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. You know, people often ask me, they say, what is Curtain Call all about? And, you know, I tell them, you know, it's about theater and you have these conversations and stuff. But really, have you ever stopped to think about the stories that make you who you are? You know, the moments that shaped you, the people who influenced you, the challenges you overcame, and perhaps the unexpected turns that changed the course of your life. And we all have those stories, right? Most, of course, are never written down, and many are never told at all. But maybe that's why I've always believed that Curtain Call isn't really a show just about theater. It's really about people told through theater. And that idea is really highlighted in today's episode, because the story begins with one man who tucked away his memories away in a drawer for more than 35 years, convinced that they were simply stories from another time. As it turned out, they were something much more. They became the heart of a remarkable theatrical experience coming to the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center for one special performance only this Thursday night, August the 6th at 7 o'clock. So, I hope it got your curiosity going. Anyway, find your seat. The house lights are beginning to dim, and another unforgettable story is waiting in the wings as the conversation begins right now. My guests tonight are the creative team behind Being Somebody, a moving father and daughter theatrical experience that combines the art of storytelling, music, humor, and heartfelt reflection. Dr. Howard Mace is an executive coach, organizational psychologist, writer, storyteller, and beginning at the ripe young age of 87, became a performer. He's still actively coaching clients at the age of 90. Howard brings audiences into his world of post-war Brooklyn through stories filled with warmth, humor, and insight. And joining him is his daughter, Marla Mace, an internationally touring singer-songwriter, playwright, recording artist, and performer whose work has been celebrated for its fearless honesty, emotional depth, and unique artistic voice. And completing the trio in the studio today is director Elizabeth Browning, an award-winning filmmaker, director, acting coach, and founder of Joy Light Productions, whose work focuses on personal transformation, authentic self-expression, and the power of storytelling. Together, they have created a production that has enjoyed sold-out performances throughout New York and beyond. And I had the pleasure of seeing this show a while back when it was shown at the Delaware Valley Opera Center. And now you'll get the opportunity to see it too, but only for one night only at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, as I mentioned earlier, this coming Thursday at 7 o'clock. Howard, Marla, Elizabeth, welcome to Curtain Call again, right? You guys were on it not too long ago, and we did a little on the spot when I came to see the show at the Delaware Valley Opera Center back in, was it April?
It was in April, yeah.
It was in April. A wonderful show, had a great experience there. They had a nice question and answer afterwards. But Howard, I'm going to start the show with you because the intriguing part of this, not only that you started becoming an actor at 87, now 90 years old, and you've been doing this since then. The stories come from a draw of stories that you wrote about your life. Growing up in Brooklyn, what prompted you to start doing that? What was it that was the seed that got you to start writing stories about a journal almost? Like,
I've been asking myself that same question actually for years, because I think back, it was in 1988. They were written in a period of time of about 6 months.
Oh, that short a time. Yeah. Wow.
And I just had a change in my life of significance. I had a serious illness that was a question mark of whether or not it would be continuing or not. I had gotten well, and I reflected on the experience, of course. And so I decided one of the best ways to continue the reflection is to put pen to paper and write the stories. Started with a very simple one about man's best friend, and it was about a dog.
Yeah.
And it was a short story, and yeah, that was easy and encouraged me to write another one and another one, and kept going until I think the number was 14 or 15 stories that actually had been written, and all during the period of February of 1988 through June of 1988. And I had a list of further topics to write about. When you live a long life, I just started writing and then I just stopped writing after a while. I had accomplished what I unconsciously needed, was to talk about myself and think about myself and understand better who I was. And that was how it happened. And the interesting thing about it is that I really did not think about it as having any publication of any type. I put them in a drawer, and I began using the stories as topics for conversation when the visitors came to the house. I'd read one story, and then I'd say, okay, let's talk about it. What was your life like around that particular topic, and so on? And I left it there, and it stayed there in the drawer, pulled out occasionally for visitors, and until the change took place and why it wound up a play. My wife had died on December 22nd, 2022. There was a funeral, of course, and then there was the mourning period, also known as the shiva period, and Marlo and I were alone in the house. We had one visitor came in, and it was Elizabeth, and we got into chatter about life and things. And Marla has said, my dad had written some stories, she said to Elizabeth, and she knew Elizabeth a heck of a lot better than I did. He worked with Elizabeth, got help from Elizabeth in her acting. And Elizabeth said, I'd love to hear the stories. And okay. So I sat there and I read the stories, one after the other.
Wow.
After other. And I could see the changes in Elizabeth's face as I was reading them.
Pick up?
Yeah, go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I had no idea what to expect, and I went to pay my respects, and he started reading these stories, and I was laughing, and I was crying, and I was so profoundly moved, and it was like being transported back to a gentler, kinder time in our history. And the way he tells the stories are so wonderfully unique and delightful. And I said, this is a show. This should be a show. I said, the world really needs to hear these stories.
Was there a point, though, in listening to the stories when the director turned on and the visitor turned off?
I don't know that I thought it was really going to happen. When I'm moved in the way that I was moved, I knew that there was something special. And I'm not sure it was the director as much as a fellow artist and collaborator. And I saw this coming to life, and I saw what could happen if they brought these stories to the stage. And so I don't think my director hat I'd put it on quite
yet. Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay.
Yeah, but I knew artistically that there was something of great value in this. Wow. And our stories are so important, especially now.
Sure.
And so I was excited. It was a great suggestion, and I put it out there. I said, this should be a show. And then Marla.
Yeah, it's funny hearing the story. So I immediately was like, first of all, I was the one who was like, Dad, read Elizabeth your stories.
Right, right.
It wasn't just here. So it was just like, I knew it would make him feel better because he actually, I laugh about telling stories, but over the years, he did read his stories. He would love to read his stories to people. So if people would come over, he would read them. And then I think even more so towards that time when my mom was sick a lot, he would read stories. And I gave him, whenever I would come over, or friends, it would be like, he loved to do it. So when she died, I was such a loss, obviously, for both of us, but for him. And so it was like, of course, read. I want him to feel good. And I love the stories. I knew she's like a wonderful audience and loves to help people. But I didn't expect her necessarily to say that. But when she did, I was immediately like, yes, absolutely. Because I already saw a window. First of all, I think they're great. Mm-hmm. But I saw a window of helping healing for my father and for me. We were just talking about this morning, like a window of like, what is he going to do now? Even though he still was working, because he said, I don't know where I'm going to get my love from now that your mom died. I still have my work, but what else? And then I was like, this would be amazing. And I always want my family to be involved in theater and writing and stuff. So it was just like, yes. And then the famous part is that he said about the story, like why you didn't want to do it at first.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that. My first reaction to Elizabeth's suggestion and Marla's enthusiasm.
we can hear in her voice as she talks about it.
Was no way. Come on. I'm not an actor. The picture in my mind was that I'm standing on a stage having memorized all these stories. I said, I'd have to sit down before I even think about practicing that. And then Elizabeth said,
you can read them.
Yeah.
You don't have to memorize them.
Right.
You can hold the script and you can tell your stories. And that was when the light bulb went off.
That was a turning point.
Yeah.
That was a turning point for me to say, well, yeah, maybe. but it really was the thing that moved it. Now,
I was going to say, but also, I was already like, I'm in. When Elizabeth left, I was like, we're doing this. And actually one of them, I don't know which one, but one of them said, and Marla can be in it. I don't remember which one. I think it might have been you. I'm not sure if it was Elizabeth or my father.
As soon as there was energy and it was like, yes, let's do this. I was like, Marla, you could be in this because she is an incredible songwriter, singer, storyteller. And I thought, oh my gosh, their stories could come together.
But when she left, it was more like, okay, bye. She had to leave. And I'm like, remember, at the door, I'm like, Elizabeth, we're doing it. I already had decided that I was going to do everything I could to make it happen. And then I think I called her a couple of weeks later. She's like, I really want to do this. And she's like, well, I'm going to L.A. You had to do stuff. And then I said, no, we're ready to start, for real.
Love it.
There's another element to all of this in terms of my accepting the idea and carrying going forward with it. My wife had been ill for a number of years, actually bedridden for 5 years.
And you took care of her.
I was a caretaker, but I kept working at the same time just to keep busy. So, of course, when she passed, there was a thought that went through my mind. So what do I do now? Do I go back on and start expanding my practice some more? I just didn't know. I was uncertain. This was a compelling idea, obviously, because when I was writing the stories, you could, as we all know, you could choose from a million different moments in your life to write a story about, right, that have happened. But what happened with me was that I really thought long about stories that would have a universal appeal.
Wow.
And that was the critical element for me also, is I was going to write something that people would be able to identify with it. Not in the details, of course, that was my life, but and the recognition of the theme underlying the story.
Well, that's interesting because initially when you started writing this, it almost sounded like you were writing it for yourself, you know,
in a way
you had just gotten over this long illness, which, by the way, was a very serious illness, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Right.
So you had gotten over this, and I was thinking almost as a way to, well, just in case anything happens, I could pass this on to my daughter and possibly other family members who might be interested in my life. So you were writing it initially maybe for you with the idea of family. But at some point, what you're telling me, it seems like you started to think at some point, well, this could be applicable to other people. My life story, what I have to offer, what I have lived through can resonate with many people. What I'm getting?
Well, when I was writing it, I don't think I thought that way. I thought really about just releasing my own thoughts.
Sure.
But they started taking shape. I began to see the storylines that I was choosing had a universal feel to it. Mm. And that was a critical element for me. The topics or the themes underlying each story, I felt like had to resonate with either the readers, the listeners, as it turns out, the audience now, because it winds up as a play.
Right. And obviously you had, prior to Elizabeth hearing it, you had shared it with other people.
Yes.
And so you must have gotten a response, right, Marla, yeah. at some point?
My father has a lot of fans to begin with, just as a work. Like, he's a mentor for many people. My whole life, he was people calling every day. They call him for work, but more than just work. He is an executive coach and all that, but it's just like he has certain people to this day that call him every single day. And he's just that guy. And people who have ever met my dad are always like, I love your father. Like, friends of mine, like, I love your dad. Can I call him? Like, literally, my whole life. That. So the people, like his friend Jack, knows these stories by heart. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like a fan. And he was like, wait, you can't not do that? The Bobby
Thompson,
you got to
put
story.
That one in. Okay.
Oh, totally. And people have their favorites.
I love
so
that.
A bunch of people really know his story. So like, people knew them who know him. But there is something about the transformation from seeing them as the stories to what Elizabeth brought into it, as far as making them just completely pop on stage. Like, she really got that, and also got him to tell them in a way that was also super powerful. This is her baby, her vision.
If I could just add once I committed to doing it as a play, taking the stories and using them in a play, I was fully committed. And even in terms of Elizabeth can tell more because she was the one, and I needed to learn. What do you do when you're on the stage? How do you address the audience? And so that was a commitment that I made personally and physically, move towards her to be trained.
It was thrilling and shocking, because I thought, okay, we're going to do this. We don't know how we're going to do this. And the first day we met in the studio, he comes in and I do a warm-up, a physical. All my work is physical and vocal and emotional. Sure. And so I said, okay. And I was being very careful and gentle. I'm like, we're going to do this little exercise. And he gets up and he's throwing stuff out, and he's and he's making sounds and he's walking around. And I went, oh, my gosh. And then my thought was he was going to sit and read and Marla was going to be circling around him. And then about 5 minutes in, I said, Howard, what would happen if you stood up? And he stood up as if he'd been on the stage his whole life.
Wow.
And he goes over and he leans on a podium. And I was like, okay, I know what can happen now. And so what's beautiful is that they both have stories about early childhood. They both have stories about adolescence. They both have stories about those moments that surprise us. And that all emerged. They started to play off one another, and we all became inspired. We all became more alive. And he has a great saying, you're never too old to be young.
Oh.
And it was like we all became young together.
That's amazing.
And we made something wonderful.
I love that. But Marla, it's an important point too, because this is not just your dad's stories. At some point, it became your stories too. There was a part in your early career when someone first suggested to you to become an actress or to become someone on the stage where you were a bit reluctant.
Oh, yeah.
I remember before, was it with the Ensemble Studio Theater?
Well, there was,
Good,
thank you. Tom, all right. Yes, so basically, I had always wanted to try acting. I was shy as a kid, but as far as acting and stuff. But I was always like, oh, I'd love to try an acting class. And I didn't. I wrote. I was like a bit of a writer. And then I took a class. The first one I took was like at the New School, like a continuing ed. And I fell in love with acting. But it was just like a straight up acting class. And I loved it. But then I opened a business, and then I had my first child. Mm-hmm. So it got pushed off a bit about, okay, I really am doing this acting thing. And then a friend was taking a class, and her husband, she's like, oh, we're taking a class together. And I was kind of like, wait, they're young parents. I should go back and take a class because it's been a while. And I said, oh, like maybe I'll take it at an Ensemble Studio Theater. Mm-hmm. And I thought they'd say, come with us to our class. That's what I wanted her to say. And she was like, here's a class that's going on there, creating a one-person show. And I'm like, what? I'm like, no way. Like, I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, I'm not like Eric Bogosian. I'm not like Sandra Bernhard. Are you kidding me? No way. And she's like, why? Why not? You like writing. You like acting. And this is kind of friend she was. She was so direct. I was kind of like, well, she has a point. But I was terrified, but I took it anyway. I was like, you know what? I needed to do something. So I went in, scared to death, going, this is so not me. Very removed from anything I would ever think of. And then I went in and went around a room. There was like, I don't know, 15, 20 people there. And then she gave us a word to write about.
Yeah.
And it was like on shoes. At least mine was. And then we wrote. Now, I can rewrite. That was like, I just basically, as you can see, I can speak really fast. That's how I, when I write, it's even faster. It's like, blah. And then we went around the room and read it. And when I read my thing, she was like, oh, my God, you're like Lou Reed. You're like Iggy Pop and all these rocks, like downtown New York City rock stars. And I'm like, what? Like this? And she's like, I totally see this. And I'm like, this is just like my journal. This is me every day. And then from there, I stuck with it. And we did a showcase and I did the beginning of a play that became the Canarsie line. And yeah, and like people were like, oh my God, you've been doing this forever. Like they thought I'd been performing forever. I'm like, no, I've never. And then that started me in terms of the writing.
Right.
Music, I started later. And then Elizabeth, that's how I met her. And she changed my life. Elizabeth Browning's a lifesaver. People out there, just letting you know.
Well, Elizabeth, as I mentioned a moment ago, there's two different generations in this show. How did you formulate that in your head and weave that together so smoothly?
What I did was I started with his stories, mm-hmm. and I looked at what the journey would be from early childhood and then his very funny, fumbling first attempts at romance. And I created that. And then Marla came in and said, oh, I've got this piece that could come here. And then when there wasn't a piece, she created it.
Okay.
And so it was like a collaborative, exciting effort within the studio so that it wasn't already ready-made pieces. Mm-hmm. There were his stories. Mm-hmm. And then there were things that Marla had written and songs that she had. And then there were new things that emerged as we played together. I believe art is the most exciting when nobody knows what's going to happen in the next moment. And everyone discovers it together.
That's true.
And it was that kind of thing in the studio where we were bouncing off one another. We were trying things. We were experimenting. And then it created itself. It came into focus. And then once I saw what we had, then it was easy to begin to bring in the slides and the lighting and the sound and the things that create the magic.
Yeah, that's so important. Is this isn't just people speaking on stage. We should be clear. There's music involved. There's slides. For me, that was some of the best parts is seeing your life growing up through some of the old pictures. It's really very touching, very poignant. And also very funny. There's a lot of humor that both of you bring into this piece. Was that something that was naturally in the writing, or did you have to develop that to find the places where to bring in the humor and where to bring it down again? If we're talking about Brooklyn, it's like being on the Coney Island roller coaster. You're going up and down emotionally and excitement. How did you figure all that, Marlon?
That's definitely like a team thing. I, in general, like my writing style in general is very roller coastery. That's just my personal style, but I didn't really bring that to this piece, quite honestly. Originally, it was Dad's stories. It was like, okay, how do we do? And I thought, I will just try to mirror his themes, you know, every few stories. So that's what I looked for. And I wasn't really thinking about it as like my full out growing up stories.
But the humor.
But the humor was written.
He's funny.
He's funny.
Okay. He is funny. He makes me laugh until tears come down my cheeks.
Oh, yeah, and the stories are funny. And I actually found them once I started hearing them on stage, that's when I realized how much funnier they, but yeah, it was, I think it is naturally in the writing, but Elizabeth brings it out. This is the luck of having a genius director, because she really knows humor and she really knows what audiences need and really arced it out in this way. She is amazing at that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, so she brought that out that was already there in his stories.
Yeah, I didn't bring this up during the show, but when you brought up that story, Howard, the enema story.
Yes, the enema. You say the enema or the enemy? Or the both enema. The same. They're both the same. Yeah.
When you told that story, it brought back so many memories for me in that moment of the Bronx, Arthur Avenue. You go out on the street and you could smell the sawdust that the shops would throw on the floor, and you could smell the cheese that was being made down the street. It was an amazing sensory experience, and you brought that back to me going to see your show. So that is my next question, Howard. Many people at the end of the show actually do come up to you and say, that has happened to me. How does that make you feel when you hear that?
Well, it's confirming for me in terms of my thought on universality of the themes.
That's right.
Right?
Okay.
And people would come up to me and say, hey, let me tell you about my grandmother. Or I had a similar experience here with my grandfather or my father, and they would share their experience with me. And there's a lot of identity, which is what always was my hope when I wrote the stories, that people would read them let alone see them now, see them told, with a kind of a personal recognition. As we continue to get older, there's always change that takes place in our lives, and that requires an ability to adapt to the changes. So my point was that when I would do the stories, my expectation was that the audience would be able to recognize the theme, as I said. And one other thing, of course, humor was mentioned. Humor is something that I believe, and I've seen it as a psychologist working with people over the years, which is a wonderful quality to have in a lifetime because it relaxes the situation. No matter what you're talking about, if you can find some way to put some humor in the context.
Absolutely.
Well, excellent.
Yes. Elizabeth, yes.
I want to loop back to, we say it's not the details, but honestly in theater, sometimes it's the details mm-hmm. that makes it universal.
Sure.
And you talked about Avenue.
Yeah.
I grew up in Texas. My husband grew up in South Dakota. And when Marla does that nighttime as a little kid outdoors and hearing the crickets cricketing and the voices of adults playing games through the windows of the houses, that takes me back to my childhood in the backyard in Dallas, Texas. My husband remembers it. And it's like, even though the details are different, it connects us to this part of ourselves that we all remember being a fan, a baseball fan, and that moment, or being the kid who finally is somebody when they haven't been seen before. And people say, well, is it a Brooklyn story? It's totally a Brooklyn story, growing up Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And yet people from everywhere come forward with tears in their eyes and laughing and saying, I've got the same story. That's my story. And I think that's when theater becomes about something bigger than any one of us.
Yeah. That's where you've really been able to plug in, I think, when putting this show together and taking these pieces.
Absolutely. That happened. We just did a show 2 weeks ago in Canarsie, which is where I grew up and where my father still is. And the audience was all Caribbean women. And they loved it. It was one of the most beautiful. I love every show and everything else, but this was one of my most heartfelt, for all of us, shows that we've done. Because they stayed for a talk back. They asked 45 minutes of questions. They came over my story. They all told them about their story. And they have very different stories. They were just, so it just shows you, just again, we know a great story, great art is people can relate and it can move. You don't have to know it. And actually someone the other day came over to me, someone I know, and he was like, I've never seen a show where the father tells his story of sexual awakening. And the daughter, he said, that was so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And I never even thought of it that way. I know that we put it there in that order. That was specific. But the way he got it.
Yeah, and that what struck me was the comfort level you both had about it. Because being a father and having a daughter, it's like, I don't know if I'd ever talk about that with my daughter, no matter what age I'm at. But yeah, you guys were able to do it. And it's charming, it's heartwarming, and it's funny as well. So it was really, really nice. And if you're just tuning in, folks, you have been listening to Curtain Call here on Radio Catskill. I'm Tom Candela, your host. And today on the show, I have the creatives behind the show, Becoming Somebody, happening this coming Thursday, the 6th of August, over at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center at 7 o'clock. And we've been talking with the creators, as I mentioned. That's Howard Mace, Marla Mace, and the director of the show, Elizabeth Browning. We're going to get a little break here, and when we come back, we'll get to the second half of our conversation, so do stay tuned.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we celebrate 30 years of the music that's shaken, not stirred, with the first of two concerts. First up, it's Exotica Cocktail. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me for the Retro Cocktail Hour, Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
With Morning Edition from NPR News, you don't have to wonder where your information is coming from, because we tell you. Get your news straight from the source every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on Radio Catskill.
And welcome back to the show. I'm Tom Candela, and the show is Curtain Call. And today on the program, I am honored to have the guest from the upcoming production of Being Somebody, those guests being Howard Mace, Marla Mace, and the director of the show, Elizabeth Browning. Being Somebody will be presented one night only, folks, over at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. That's on Thursday, August the 6th. Show goes up at 7 p.m. Elizabeth, I wanted to talk a little bit about your career other than directing, because you are a mentor and somebody who brings both confidence and self-expression about healing people in that way and sitting down and speaking with them to get them to find themselves, be somebody. Now, why do you think that so many people, and there are a lot, we all have this, don't recognize their own gifts?
I think people discount the value and the power of their own story in their own life, that we grow up being told, oh, don't brag, don't make a fuss, put other people in front of you. And so we learn how to discount that which lives within us. Mm-hmm. And my experience is anytime someone gets to step forward and begin to share what their truth is, not who they think they're supposed to be, but truly a story or something that is important to them, it actually opens everyone's heart and it opens minds, and people start to say, this is a way for us to connect. And I don't think that people realize that. I say this at the end of every show when we do a talk back, your story matters. Mm. And there are probably people in your life right now that would treasure knowing things about you that they have never heard, that they don't know. And he actually says that in the show. I wish that I'd known more about my dad. There's so much we don't know about one another. And so I think self-expression is healing.
Yeah.
Self-expression, I say it's not therapy, but it's therapeutic. And the beautiful thing about storytelling or about the stage or about writing is that there's no part of you that you have to hide. And when we finally take the step into expressing ourselves, and it doesn't have to be verbally. Some people paint it. Some people dance it. Some people cook it.
Correct.
But it's the act of creativity itself that when you open the door to that, you take even a tiny step into your creativity, there's magic that happens. And I worked with a group of kids for a while, and there was a kid that was hair down over his face and very pulled back and hiding out in the corner. And the other kids were mean to him, mm-hmm. and they picked on him. And so I put him into one of the leading roles, and he started to express, and he's like, oh, well, this is a character. Yes. But he began to step into the parts of himself that he'd never allowed himself to step into. And it was like a miracle. Wow. Everybody started to go, oh, my gosh. And he discovered what was possible that he never knew.
Wow.
So I'm in love with self-expression and creativity and storytelling and people having the courage to be all that they can be. It's not that you're someone different. You're just allowing more of yourself to show up. And it's beautiful.
I think sometimes we discount, like you were saying, just our own life and story because it's ours. It's like me saying, yeah, but who's interested in this?
Right.
And not realizing that it is, that everyone's is interesting. And we just think if it comes easy to us, then it must not be worthwhile. Like some idea, like I have to work hard, or like that's some natural thing that you have that we each have that's unique to us. And we just don't value it. But it actually is the most valuable thing we have.
So Howard, when people come up to you after the show and express how excited they are by, like you just mentioned, the Caribbean audience, the African-American women who came to see the show, they loved it for different reasons, or they found different parts of the show that they connected with, obviously.
Right.
Maybe not the enema, but it was some of the sexual things.
I actually think the enema is something. I actually was joking. I'm like, I think that every person in that audience completely related to enema, because I think more like in Caribbean or other cultures, like that's a very big thing.
Yeah. There are many other stories other than the enema.
Yes. Please come to our show.
Yes, there are many stories, I have to say. But we're talking about that because that's one of the ones that connected with me. And certainly it was one of the more funny ones because the way you tell it is hysterical in the show. So let's go to music. I think it's important to talk about the music as well in this show because it's a big part of it. Mm-hmm. Along with the visuals that you see, it really connects you to the times and those different eras because we're talking about the 1940s and up the 1970s when you grew up in that area, Marla. Mm-hmm. So how important was that to, and you're a musician as well as an actress, how important was that or did you find that it's almost like another character in the show?
For sure. Elizabeth definitely put together the playlist, the pre-show playlist, which is all the songs of that, of the 40s and 50s.
And we start with a very Lawrence Welke, magical,
it's a song
Hold Fast Your Dreams. That
it's a song that I have on one of my albums, but I did it because it was a song that my mother wrote. And so we started with that because it is very much that time period. Yes, mm-hmm. It has that la la. Yeah. So that, but it is on one of my albums of the night. And if you come to the show, you'll hear the full story about that song.
Yeah, there's a great story about that song.
And then there's the, in terms of things that scare me, my father loves that song. And he originally was like, you have to put this song in. I do it in every show. But my father was like, oh, you got to do this. There's so many things that scare me. I was like, okay, I love doing that. And so that's one of them. And it does, but it does, again, it mirrors the theme. He's talking about being things that scared him, his grandfather and. Go ahead, Dad.
Well, yeah, my interpretation of Marla's stories and participation in the show, this commonality of the theme again. Whatever Marla sang, she sang about a topic that I talked about when I was growing up in the 40s. I mean, it was told differently and told the story different times and everything. But the idea behind the story and the song is connected, and that's how,
right.
How the show continues that way.
That's right. It supports the emotional journey that we're taking on during the show, and I think that's very important. So that is intentional. That's not just something that comes up, right, Elizabeth? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Music is the language of the heart, and music can reach people in ways that sometimes words don't. And Marla is extremely skilled and has a wide, diverse range of music.
The Do You Remember song, I wrote after my mother died. I started at one point when she was still alive, but then I hadn't finished it. And then I said, I have this song for this show, Do You Remember? I'm recording it now. That's the moment with the slides and the pictures behind and Elizabeth, her beautiful creation of that moment.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's a big part of the show, the music is, as well as the slides and stuff like that, because that really worked for me. To hearing the music to your stories, Howard, did that in any way change how you felt about them or add to your nostalgia?
What it did, so as you know, I had that story having my difficulties in school with a teacher, if you remember, and then Marla follows it up with the story of her concern with the teacher in a song. So there's continuity, there's an attitude of someone growing up in the 40s, an experience of someone in the 40s versus someone who's growing up in the 70s. But towards the end of the show, as it comes towards the end, there's music that brings us together.
Yeah, so that's a brilliant way to use the music. So.
And one other thing that helps so much with the music, for us in the pre-show, we're behind, and it really helps us get into the mood of the show.
You tell me something about a little ritual that you do. You say you can't believe that you're doing this together or something like that.
Yeah.
Expound on that if you would.
Well, yeah, that's true. Here's my daughter, right? Marla and I were on the stage when Marla was about 3 years old, originally, honestly, at a beach club that we were at, and it was a contest for lookalikes, fathers and daughters. We came nowhere near first place. We did not look like each other. And then here is years later, and we're on the stage again, and we're singing, and particularly when we get towards the end, when we're sharing a story about my wife, her mom, right, that brings us together in a very close, very heart-rendering way.
Yeah, and people say it's an incredible thing to see a real father and a real daughter, and someone recently said this is like an ode to love. And some people will say, oh, my gosh, I wish I had that relationship with my father. Or, oh, my God, the chance that you had to do this together. Or
this weekend, got a lot of messages because of people who knew me at this one, because we do one a year. We try to do at least one in hometown Manhattan. But someone was like, I left and like, I love it so much. I called my father on the way home.
Oh.
And another one said, oh, I have to have bring my father back to see this. And other people are crying because they wish their father could see it, or
right.
Or they didn't have that relationship.
Right. Well, that too is an excellent point, because it's not limited to father-daughters.
Not at all.
Yeah, because I certainly was thought of that too. My father's gone. I didn't have that as close a relationship with him as the two of you do. So yes, there's that aspect of it too. It makes you look inward and miss the things that you could have done or could have had or should have said. So there's a lot of that, too, that love connects in that way.
And about family. It's a celebration of family. And there was a lady after one show that came up, and she said, my life was not easy, but now I see it really was a beautiful fairy tale.
Wow.
Because people start to go, it's all valuable. It's all beautiful. It all matters.
Mm-hmm. Right. Even the hard stuff was also a fairy tale.
Like, yeah.
It's just the life is a fairy tale. If you don't think of a fairy tale as always being like Disney thing, it is. It's all magical.
It is.
The ups and the downs.
And when you're in it, you don't see it most of the time.
Exactly.
It's when you have to step back a bit and take a look at it when you hear the stories such as Howard presented in his vision and how he saw things. It makes you look back and say, wow. And I'm part of that too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I'm part of that.
Resonates with it. And Elizabeth created it so beautifully to pulled that out for people to really see that magic. And she's like, I see like the innocence and the beauty of this time. And I'm like, some of this stuff is really hard, but she saw the whole, it's not just the things that could be considered hard. The whole life is beautiful and full of love.
That's great. He also, Howard said, and I'm going to direct this to you, Marla. He told me that after working on the show together, that he saw you more as an adult and a creative partner. That was something he said to me in that interview that we had together.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're hearing that for the first time.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel, hearing that?
No, it makes me feel great. My father, it makes me feel, as a creative partner, that is really exciting. He'll come to my gigs, because he's always come to them. But now I'm coming to your gigs because I'm in showbiz.
Yeah.
But he is. Like, all my friends know him. They know that he's the rock star. He really, I guess. What exactly did you mean by that?
what I was saying was that if you think about it, your wife gives birth, you have a child, you help them grow, you're teaching, you're protecting, you're developing, and then they reach an age where they start becoming a lot more independent and less needy of the others. So, but in this particular experience that Marla and I have, at least the way I feel about it, is that we are now sharing something which is not built around helping me stay healthy and alive, basically, or vice versa. It's about something meaningful in its own right for audiences together. So, I said, you're a partner.
She's
my partner, actually.
It's also been very healing for us with the losses that we've had to spend this time together. We've always been close, but we didn't spend time creating together.
Yeah. Well, what I got out of it when he said it was, again, having a daughter, and you think of the relationships that you have, and there's in your head the father-daughter relationship. And I brought her up. I taught her this. I taught her how to ride the bike. And all those things that you do as a father, protector, as you mentioned. But until you spend time with them in the way that the two of you spend time together is a totally different relationship. It's not just father-daughter. Mm-hmm. That's there, of course. But it's also adult-adult.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's also creative-creative.
Yeah.
And that's what I got out of it when you said that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent observation.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what I feel about it.
That's great. So tell me now, I'm going to direct it maybe to each of you, but I'll start with you, Howard.
Yeah.
Tell me, what is being somebody mean to you? Because you chose that for a title of the show.
Okay. When I was writing the stories, as I said, there were 13 of them, and I put a heading on each story reflecting the theme. And one of the themes was about finally being recognized as a kid growing up by other kids and other adults. And the name of that one was Being Somebody. When we were looking for a name for the show, I went to the bigger picture here, and I sang, It's all about who you are, who you become.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the view that I ultimately took on the show, as being somebody fundamentally means we're all somebody. Who we are may be different, but we're all being somebody. That's fundamentally what it is. So this is a story about moments in life that help create and develop the being somebody.
The person who you are.
Right.
Do you have a different take on that, Elizabeth, at all, as a director?
Well, the show itself has been life-changing for me.
Mm.
And it's not having been somebody. It's being somebody, which for me means it's an ongoing, active, creative choice day by day, and we can change who it is we're being from moment to moment. And in the way that doing this show has changed me, I look forward to being somebody new and continuing to grow. And that's been incredibly inspiring for me, because I'm with a 90-year-old brilliant psychologist who's just getting started. And
you're talking about Marlon.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And I mean, he had been an incredibly faithful, loving husband who stayed at home by his wife's side and worked on the phone from home. And he'd been a therapist, executive coach, psychologist. And now he's being an actor, and he's
somebody else
on a radio station telling stories, and we don't know what lies ahead. Mm-hmm. So being somebody for me is an in-the-moment, active moment of discovery and filled with possibilities, and that's what it means for me.
One small piece of humor I will put in here is that I am in preparation for the follow-up play.
Okay.
And I call it Being Nobody. That'll be short.
And of course, Marla, who's like, I disagree with that. Because they say in yoga and all that stuff, the being nobody is the place where you actually just begin. But this is just me being like, we are some father-daughter
stuff. Yeah.
Yogery, yes. For me, being somebody is about loving yourself. And knowing that you're always someone no matter what. Mm-hmm. And because there's all these things about, they came from nothing, or you're a nobody. And these things that we hear from the popular culture, or just the world, like this thing, work hard, you can be someone, and all this stuff. And as opposed to, no, I am just by the mere fact that I'm alive, I am someone. And to be fully in that, love oneself, accept oneself. And that's, I think, the challenge of our entire lives, is to grow to that where we can actually be. And then it's like, no, I can just be, because I am already enough. I'm not disagreeing with what they say, because I think that is what everything that Elizabeth said, and my dad is absolutely 100% with being somebody as well. But I'm adding to that.
Sure.
That sense of just, you're someone.
I love that you said that.
And because I have, because I have some of the mental health stuff, and I told you about my daughter, losing my daughter to mental suicide, it's like I just want people to know that they are enough as is, and they're loved, and that is being. That's just, for me, that's
sure,
just a very important.
It's a good point, part of it.
Yeah.
Just before we begin every show, I say, sit back, relax, and enjoy being somebody.
Mm.
And I realized early on as I said it, that it wasn't just the show that I was talking about. It's time for us to sit back, relax, and enjoy being somebody.
Oh, I love that. That is beautiful. That is incredible.
Well, there you have it. Okay, so to get tickets to the show, what do we do?
You could go to our website, www.beingsomebodytheshow.com, and we will have a link there as well.
Very good. And you can also, folks, you'll see pictures from some of the past performances, as well as testimonials from some of the audience members that are on that website, the Being Somebody website. I do want to talk about a couple other things. First of all, Elizabeth, your personal website. If people are interested in your coaching or your mentorship or getting in touch with you, maybe they have a show they want you to direct. How would they do that?
Elizabeth with a Z, E-L-I-Z-A-B-E-T-H, Browning.com.
Okay, and you'll see a lot of good stuff there, too. I searched on that, and you also have one as well.
Yes, my website is MarlaMace.com, and that's MarlaMace.com. And if you want to reach my dad, you should reach out to him at my website as
there
well.
There you go.
My comment is, as I thought about life, not only mine and other lives of people close to me and distant from me, that life is best defined as change. That from the moment we're born, when we learn to talk, and then we learn to walk, and then we learn to be a kid and go to school, and then we make decisions about what jobs we're going to have and who we're going to meet, and then we're going to get married, and then we have children, and life continues all the way through. So I look at it all and I say, hey, life is about change. If you want to have a satisfying life or a happy life, it's about the abilities of all of us to be able to adapt to those changes. It's a simple concept, but it's very true for me on being somebody. There is now added purpose to my life. I continue working as an executive coach and psychologist, but the added purpose of entertaining and expressing myself in a different way on a stage to audiences everywhere is extremely heartwarming and continuing growth related for me personally.
Yes, Elizabeth.
And I just want to say, if there's anybody listening who has a dream or an idea or even a stirring in the heart of something you think you might want to try, it is never too late to step into a dream.
Beautifully said, both of you. Both of you, very good. Well, I want to thank the three of you for coming all the way out from Brooklyn and various other parts of the New York State out to Liberty, New York, to join me in studio today. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Tom.
That was fun. I really do enjoy it when people come out to the studio. As I said, they made a very long trip to come out to the Liberty Studios that day when they came out. My sincere thanks once again to Dr. Howard Mace, Marla Mace, and Elizabeth Browning for joining me on the show this evening. It's amazing where one person's story can take you. Howard never imagined the memories he tucked away in a drawer more than 35 years ago would one day become a stage production or bring the three of them here to Curtain Call for a conversation that we shared today. If you'd like to experience being somebody for yourself, you can catch this one-night-only performance on Thursday, August 6th, that's this Thursday, 7 o'clock at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. And I have a feeling you'll leave the theater talking about the stories you grew up with and maybe even remembering a few you'd forgotten. To obtain tickets and to get show information, there's actually two ways you can do that. You can go to beingsomebodytheshow.com or hpacny.org. And before we lower the curtain, here's a look at just some of the wonderful theater performing arts events taking place right here in our very own backyard. If you're looking for an evening that's simply a lot of fun, well, head over to the Forestburg Playhouse, where Hairspray continues through August 9th. Big songs, big laughs, and a whole lot of heart. It really is one of those shows that sends people out of the theater smiling. For tickets and complete information on that show and the other shows that are coming up in the coming weeks, over at the Forestburg Playhouse, you go to fbplayhouse.org. And Shadowland Stages in Ellenville, Neil Simon's Brighton Beach Memoirs continues through August 9th. If you've ever grown up in a big family, chances are you'll recognize somebody on that stage. It's a funny, heartfelt, and of course, one of Neil Simon's very best comedies. For tickets and complete information, visit shadowlandstages.org. And if you've never experienced theater under the open sky, well, Farm Arts Collective offers a wonderful evening at the Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. It's Dream on the Farm, number 7, Johnny Appleseed, a Historical Fantasia. It continues through August 9th where the setting is every bit as memorable as the story being told. Learn more by going to farmartscollective.org. The Phoenicia Playhouse continues celebrating its 50th anniversary season with Grease. That runs through August the 16th. And if you leave the theater without humming at least one of those songs on the drive home, well, I'd be very surprised. For tickets and complete information on that show, PhoeniciaPlayhouse.com. At the North American Cultural Laboratory in Highland Lakes, New York, theater artist Irina Krutsalina presents Notice to Appear. That's on Saturday, August the 8th at 7:30 p.m. Again, a one-night-only performance, folks, for that. This unique work in progress offers audiences a chance to experience theater that asks important questions and starts meaningful conversations. Reservations and complete information on the show, as well as other events at NACL, can be found at nacl.org. At the historic Rivoli Theater in South Fallsburg, the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop presents How to Train Your Dragon, the Musical Junior. August 14th through the 23rd are the dates for that show. Now, if you're looking for a family outing before summer slips away, this one will certainly fit the bill nicely. For tickets and complete information, visit scdw.net. And the Delaware Valley Opera continues its 40th anniversary season. Lots of anniversaries happening this year. Delaware Valley Opera, Phoenicia Playhouse, Forestburg Playhouse as well. Their 80th season. Amazing. The Delaware Valley Opera continues its 40th season with Mozart's beloved Magic Flute. That'll be performed on August 15th, 16th, 22nd, and the 23rd. That's two weekends. Whether you're a longtime opera fan or have always been curious to see one, the Magic Flute is a wonderful place to begin. And for tickets and complete information on that show, you go to DelawareValleyOpera.com or MyRiverTickets.com. And finally, if a trip to New York City is in your plans, there's still time to catch A Walk on the Moon. They were featured on the show last week. That show goes through August 22nd at the Laura Pels Theater. And of course, the reason why I bring it up is because it's set right here in the Catskills during the unforgettable summer of 1969, where a lot of other things were happening in our nation. Vietnam War, Woodstock, just to name a few. But this story is a story that feels especially close to home, as I mentioned, because it happens right here in our listening area. Learn more about that show, awalkonthemoonmusical.com. And that's going to be it for tonight's episode of Curtain Call. I want to thank all of you for spending your evening with me. If you have any comments about the program, suggestions, or future guests, or if you'd like to be a guest on Curtain Call yourself, well, I'd love to hear from you. Just send me an email at tom@wjffradio.org. So until next Monday evening, folks, at 7 o'clock, as usual, I'm Tom Candela. This is Curtain Call, spotlighting the magic of theater, one conversation at a time. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you at the theater.
Farm Arts Collective presents Johnny Appleseed, an historical fantasia at Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. This year's outdoor dream on the farm is supported by America 250 and takes audiences on a walking theatrical journey exploring the life and times of Johnny Appleseed, who walked over 100,000 miles planting apple trees across the frontier. Doors open at 6:30 for the Museum of Curious History, show at 7. Thursdays through Sundays, July 30th to August 9th. FarmArtsCollective.org. Paid for by Farm Arts Collective.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.